It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I hope it's better late than never, because I am late, and I apologize. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and the thorns got me before airtime instead of, you know, during. No good deed goes unpunished. So what happened is, this afternoon, you know, I told you, we're gonna get the new smoker put up Saturday. But in the meantime, I've roasted those pork butts that I had brined and seasoned and just slow roasted them in an electric roaster, and they were, oh God, they're delicious. But my plan was to make about 20 pulled pork cheesesteaks. I know, it's kind of a misnomer, but... And so I started, you know, I did all my prep. Got my green peppers sliced up and my onions and my mushrooms ready to roll. And then ran out of propane. And that meant doing something I didn't want to do, namely leaving the house. But it had to happen or else everything goes to ruin. So away I went, got my propane, came back, finished making the 20 subs, and then came in here to sit down and had to go through a massive reboot process. That explains the hour. Well, the food was an hour. The reboot was the 18 minutes or 17 minutes. But as I said, better late than never. And hi, I'm Bob. And so we're off and running for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the second day of April, 2020. And every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, because you're the ones who make it possible for everyone to get the program, whoever wants it, at no cost. It's all voluntary. And so thanks go out to our subscribers for the second day of the month. That's Rocco and Elizabeth. Thank you both so very kindly. And thank you to Brian for getting us started. The Shirley's Challenge from yesterday was down to 165, and now it's down to 140. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very, very kindly. Hopefully we'll knock that out this evening and maybe even knock out this evening's goal, too, and get the bills paid, and because I got a feeling things are going to get lean. And it's going to get difficult to keep all this going. But thank you very kindly. So if you want to help out, you know, head on .live. And the PayPal interface is right there on the main page. Can't miss it. 20 subs? Asks Brother Deacon Asa. I know it's a depressing time, Bob, but eating more won't make you any happier. No, I'm not eating my feelings, Brother Deacon Asa. That was for giving away. I got one. Berg got one. Agnes got one. Made them for the grandkids and daughter and dude and a few other folks, and they will be passed out in a socially distant fashion. You know, kind of put it on the doorstep, ring the bell, and run. Because a little goodwill goes a long way in a time when people are freaking out a little bit. Yeah. And so with every program's beginning right now, I just hope, I will say first and foremost that I hope everyone is well. And I hope that everyone is staying well, staying home, staying in if humanly possible. If not, if you're one of the folks that are out there on the front lines, no matter what it is you do, please know that you have this community's thanks and appreciation and admiration and our fondest hopes that you will as well stay well, stay whole, stay healthy, and stay with us. So thank you. Thank you. If you want to augment your Horn Live listening experience, you can always run over to headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you never have before, and jump into the chat room. If you do, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Faith Ann and House of Roberts and Silent R. Lamar and Roger up in Oregon and Squeaky and Steve. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space today to become Man Cave. He is capably assisted by his pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator sidekick and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Mm-hmm. So, enjoy. It's a rollicking good time. So, apart from the, you know, running out of propane thorn, and I guess, what, is the shit show on right now? I mean, it's almost certain that it's, there's no almost about it. It's certain it's a shit show. It's just a matter of what degree, a matter of type of shit show. You know, is there corn in the shit show or peanuts in the shit show? And yes, yes, I did just take a run at dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. Somebody's got to do it. It's a dirty job, but yeah. Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. How long until the GOP starts pounding the message that we have to cut Medicare and Social Security to recover from the COVID recession? Matt says, I give it a couple of months. Matt, you're an optimist. I give it a... I'm surprised it hasn't happened already. And to one degree or another, it may very well have happened already. Tucked away somewhere in the thousandth page of some relief bill, because we know there's some interesting stuff in there. Oh, and by the way, welfare queens assemble. Mm-hmm. What do I mean? You knew it had to happen. You knew it was going to happen. And here it is. The Trump scum have stuck their hand out. They want their damn money. They're asking for help from who? Where? Oh, yeah, Deutsche Bank, you know, that bank that they've never heard of before. Well, now they've heard of them, and Junior and the rest of the filthy clan are asking Deutsche Bank for a little bit of, you know, just a little bit of loan forgiveness or forbearance. We'll get to the forgiveness part later. Yeah, they just want a little forbearance. Like, forever. Sorry, but I'm having a hard time working up a sad for Deutsche Bank. Every other bank on earth has figured out that the Trump gang is a filthy bunch of grifters who will gladly rob you blind. Every contractor has learned that. every service provider, every caterer. Yeah. Every plumber, every roofer, every sheet metal worker, sheet metal contractor, they've learned it. And now Deutsche Bank is going to get to learn it too. Of course they are. Jesus. Well, at least, you know, at least they're consistent. At least they're predictable. I mean, grifter's going to grift, right? Because, of course. So, we've got that. What else? More than anything else, the one story that leapt off the screen at me today was the one having to do with Captain Brent Crozier of the USS Theodore Roosevelt. He's the one who pointed out that his command was rapidly becoming a plague ship, and begged for relief. Well, the Navy didn't care too much for that, and so they announced plans to, and understand, when you become the captain of a nuclear aircraft carrier, you've pretty much arrived. And you're well on your way to becoming an admiral. Well, that's probably not going to happen to Captain Brent Crozier now, because having been relieved of command, that's kind of a career killer when you get right down to it. And he has been treated as such. Why? Well, because he had the gall to stand up and speak up for the men and women in his command whose lives he was personally responsible of protecting. Well, apparently those 4,000 human beings aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt are deemed by the Trump thugs as wholly expendable. Reuters broke the news today. When his letter begging for help was leaked, the Navy had a conniption and dumped Captain Crozier. The announcement, like I said, coming today. Which kind of leaves open the question of what becomes of the sailors aboard the vessel. People are disgusted, especially when they realize that it wasn't that long ago that Corona Caligula overrode the United States Navy to pardon and then restore the rank of a war criminal. You remember Eddie Gallagher, convicted of war crimes, pardoned by Corona Caligula. But Captain Crozier, well, gets relieved of command for trying to protect his crew. It is, in the purest and simplest form sense of the word, an absolute disgrace. But then again, disgrace is par for the course for these clowns who are, well, at first they were just trying to ruin the government, because Republicans despise our form of constitutional governance. Now, however, they're actively on the march and killing people. Lots of people. Now, what's the latest over at the Johns Hopkins website? What's the horror number today? Hey, you know, it happened. I said it would happen in a couple of days. We crossed the million infections mark. 1,007,977 infections, 238,820 of them in the United States alone. It did not have to be this way. But this way it now is. Sparky tells me some old fart hand talker is talking at the shit show. Well, you can't tease me like that. That's just not fair. Let's take a peep. Or listen.
Has taught us, sir, is that we are dangerously over-dependent on a global supply chain. For our medicines, like penicillin, our medical supplies, like masks, and our medical equipment, like ventilators. We have right now, as we speak, over 50 countries have already imposed some forms of export restrictions in their country against the rest of the world. And what we're learning from that is that no matter how many treaties you have, no matter how many alliances, no matter how many phone calls, when push comes to shove, you run the risk as a nation of not having what you need. And if there's any vindication of the president's Buy American, secure borders, and a strong manufacturing base philosophy, strategy, and belief, it is this crisis, because it underscores everything that we see there. So the Buy American order, which is going through
the Jesus, this is the part where he gets filleted for his America First fascist inclinations.
I'll be really clear about that. But going forward, after this is over, the VA, DOD, HHS, and this government buys American for essential medicines, our medical countermeasures, and the medical supplies and equipment we need. At the same time, it will deregulate so we can get the FDA and EPA to facilitate domestic manufacturing and then innovate. Because the key here is having advanced manufacturing on U.S. soil that can leapfrog other countries, so we don't have to worry about competing against cheap sweatshop labor, lax environmental regulations, different tax regimes, and the massive subsidies of foreign...
No, under the Trump regime, we'll have lax environmental regulations here, by God.
So be patient with that, sir. The other priorities we have right now are the DPA and what the task force is doing. But if we learn anything from this crisis, it should be never again. Never again should we have to depend on the rest of the world for our essential medicines and countermeasures.
And by the way, we've cut them out also. To be honest, we've stopped orders going from certain places, and in a couple of places, like we had a big order going to Italy on important outfits. And
dumbass, you didn't cut them. You didn't cut them when you sent the 35,000 pounds of PPEs and vents to where? Yeah, China. Sure. Jesus. Yeah.
If you think there's bidding between federal government and state, let us know and we'll drop out immediately. Or you drop out and we lower the price.
Each other.
No. If we're bidding against each other, I said find out who it is. And usually they know. Everyone knows. And we're notified, and we get notified, and we'll either drop out or they'll drop out. But we have another problem. There are 151 countries out there beyond the states. There are 151 countries that have this problem, and they're ordering too. It's really a mess. Now, in a little while, the hardest thing to get are the ventilators because they're, you know, it takes a while to build them. And we have a lot. We have thousands of them being built right now. In a little while, they'll be worth about $5. But right now, they're very valuable. And we're going to have a lot of...
He knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. I think it was Abraham Lincoln who gave us that that line. As far as Captain Crozier is concerned, Brother Deacon Asa says, I'm beginning to wonder if we'll reach a critical mass of these generals whose careers COVID Caligula has destroyed and will begin pulling some strings with the people they inevitably know inside of the Praetorian cohort. Boy, wouldn't this country go ape shit then, as if we're not already. But there is a wealth of news to discuss this evening that it doesn't involve listening to him run his ugly gob. Let's see here. Let's check in on a little bit of elsewhere news. How about Kelly Loeffler? You know, the brand new senator from Georgistan. The pick, the chosen one of the maggots. No. The maggots wanted Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins. And I guess he's still in the running? I don't know. But she's the one who dumped millions of dollars worth of stocks once she got a briefing on what was coming via the coronavirus pandemic. Today in the Daily Beast, they reported that between January 24th and February 14th, it's 21 days, Kelly Loeffler reported selling stock jointly owned with her husband, you know, the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, that was valued between $1.275 million and $3.1 million. At the same time, however, she invested heavily in Citrix, C-I-T-R-I-X. They specialize in teleconferencing software. You know, the kind of stuff like Zoom that people are using to work remotely. So she expected a real value increase in that. On the other hand, on March 10th, said, the good news is the consumer is strong, the economy is strong, jobs are growing. Our president has done a fantastic job making sure that we're in the best position to manage through this situation. Even as she was shedding stocks like a COVID-19 patient sheds virus particles. Well, then today came along. And she took to her Twitter. And she wanted to be reassuring. And she said, it's easy to feel down right now. But we can't forget. Social distancing will save lives.
During these times, it's the small positive moments that remind us why we must stay strong. Whether you're on the front lines or at home or dumping stocks based on inside information. Oh, I added that part. Each of us plays a role in getting through this. Yes. And she didn't just say, she didn't just type it. She shook her blonde tresses and looked into the camera and talked.
Hey, everyone. I hope you had a great day. I know everyone's working hard, working from home, making sure the kids get their studies in. I've had some great conversations today, and those personal touches where you hear someone's...
Oh, great conversations and personal touches. Well, that's just lovely.
...dog in the background barking, or their kid runs into the room. I think these are great moments that remind us we're all humans in this together, working hard to keep each other safe, strong, and healthy. So thank you for continuing to social distance yourselves. It's so important that we get through this quickly and that we can all be together again soon.
Isn't that just charming?
The world would probably be better off if she was social distancing from, say, that orbit out beyond whatever Pluto is. You gotta give these billionaire oligarchs credit. They got some nerve. You got a lot of credit, too. God, they're loathsome. Or how's about Devin Nunez, whatever, who cares? He's terribly, terribly upset. Because he's heard word. Nunez did. That Adam Schiff, who is a responsible member of government, is saying that, maybe the House of Representatives might want, and the whole government in general, might want to put together a 9/11 style commission to investigate just exactly how the Trump administration managed to fuck this up so badly. I mean, in a way, you don't have to spend the money on a commission because the Trump administration, the maladministration, the Trump regime fucked this up so badly because fucking things up badly is what Trumps do. It's the only thing they can accomplish in life. But tender-hearted and thin-skinned Devin Nunes said, "We don't need another commission." Which kind of made me realize the ultimate thing we don't need is Devin Nunes. Any pushback on that? No, I didn't think so. Ah, well, how about that? Ron in Raleigh says Citrix is based right there in Raleigh. Ron also asking, was it you? Yeah, Bob, I didn't send all of our manufacturing to China or our pharmaceutical manufacturing to India, did you? Could it possibly have been friends of Trump and his cronies that gutted our manufacturing base? Now these sons of bitches stand there and act as though they had nothing to do with it. Trump's base is too fucking stupid to understand that fact. Well, I mean, Ron, come on. Trump's base is too stupid to find their ass with both hands and a GPS. So, they're that stupid. But there's also something to be said for being candid about how all our shit wound up in China. And you've got to have that long view of history that comes in so handy. You have to think back. I mean, my God. The first Prescott Bush was the one who, in 1943, through his association with Brown Brothers Harriman and their client Fritz Thyssen, got busted for doing business with Nazi Germany under the Trading with the Enemy Act because, capitalism. And so the firstborn son of Prescott Bush, was also named Prescott Bush, Prescott Bush Jr., and he had a little brother named George Herbert Walker Bush. And because of the damage that was done to the Bush reputation in the midst of the global war against fascism, when the Bushes were doing business with the Nazis, a young George H.W. Bush became the youngest ever Navy pilot. And he got hustled into the Navy to try to offset the negative press that was being generated by the fact that, well, Dadams was out there doing business with the Nazis. Yeah, oh well. George H.W. Bush didn't turn out to be a very good pilot. They put him in a torpedo plane. And so you come down through history, and his elder brother, Prescott Jr., gets deeply involved with the People's Republic of China. And way back when was the head of something called the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce. And the sole raison d'être of the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce was to achieve most favored nation trading status for the People's Republic of China. Because the Bushes really don't care where the money comes from or who suffers along the way. It is the acquisition of the money that matters. And so the Prescott Bush went hammer and tongs beating the drum for normalization of trade relations with China. And had George H.W. Bush gotten a second a term, he most surely would have granted permanent most favored nation trading status to China. But he didn't. He got his ass handed to him by William Jefferson Clinton, who then, well, he felt kind of the same way, too. And so under Bill Clinton, with a, it was one of those things that he did to make the Republican Congress happy. They weren't, of course, and they went on to impeach him anyway. But Bill Clinton granted permanent most favored nation trading status to China. And baby, the rush was on. The oligarchs and the billionaires and the masters of the universe couldn't move jobs out of the United States fast enough. Oh, hell no. If it could be disassembled and numbered and put in crates and whatever and sent to China and reassembled there, they did it. I always think of tires for some reason or another, and I think of the silicon furnace that my father busted his ass around and sweated over and swore at and over the course of his career. It's sitting somewhere in China making silicon metal. Yeah. And so that's who sent the jobs to China. And by virtue of being the nitwit that he is, Corona Caligula can stand there as a guy, say, as some neo-maxi Zoom dweeby rich man says, never again must we let this happen that our supply chain becomes dependent on blah, blah, blah. Standing there wearing a necktie that was made in some godforsaken sweatshop in China. And probably thinking lustfully about his daughter, who has sweatshops in China making knockoff shitty shoes and handbags. So, you know, color me skeptical. Very skeptical indeed. As Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx says, all this from a man who wants his, to have buildings in Saudi Arabia and wants to build in Moscow. Yeah, I mean, that whole America first thing. It's America, me first. There's a personal pronoun missing there. Oh, and an update on Rodney Howard Brownie down in Tampa. Elberton, Rhode Island, says the gospel sharp Brown was interviewed today. He said he received death threats for keeping his megachurch open. Poor baby. Somebody get him a cookie, would you? Out beyond Pluto? Thank you, Ralph. Ralph says, I think that's the Oort cloud. That would be a good place. You know, for Kelly Loeffler to shelter in place and practice social distancing. Obligatory Star Trek reference. Steve in New York says, so the Bush family or the Ferengi? They ain't Vulcans. And they don't have the martial dignity of the Klingons. Yeah, Ferengis or Romulans, one or the other, most definitely. Yeah. Oh, and down in Central Park. And I need to get hold of Tara to get her take on this. Franklin Graham, the grifter, homophobe son of Billy Graham, leaped into New York City with his Samaritan's Purse grift. And claimed that they were setting up a 60-bed COVID-19 field hospital. And at first, they were granted the right to do it, but New Yorkers aren't necessarily crazy about seeing them take up their beloved Central Park. The problem, though, is that anybody who works for Samaritan's Purse has to sign a sort of a loyalty oath. You cannot work for Samaritan's Purse if you are a Muslim. You cannot work for Samaritan's Purse if you are a Jew. You cannot work for Samaritan's Purse if you are a Jain, a Sikh, a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Confucian, a Taoist, an animist, and God knows not if you're an atheist. And so the Christians who decide to work for Samaritan's Purse sign off on this loyalty oath that includes statements. Well, it's a statement of faith, is what it's called. And you have to promise in your statement of faith that you sign off on you have to promise that you really despise the Homer sectionals and that you just know they's a going to hell. Yeah, I wish I was kidding. Here's the relevant excerpt from the statement of faith. We believe God's plan for human sexuality is to be expressed only within the context of merge, that God created man and woman as unique biological persons made to complete each other. God instituted monogamous marriage between male and female as the foundation of the family,
and the basic structure of human society. For this reason, we believe that merge is exclusively the union of one genetic male and one genetic female. And at least as of now, there's no word from the Samaritan's Purse Hospital that they're going to back away from any of that. Senator Brad Hoyleman of New York said, "You know those medical tents being constructed in Central Park? They're being set up by notorious anti-gay bigot Franklin Graham. Mr. Graham must promise to treat every patient with dignity and respect." Ha! That's going to happen. Jesus. Because, as they state, the primary mission of Samaritan's Purse is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we seek volunteers who have the same mindset. We ask that volunteers review our statement of faith and agree to support the ministry guidelines of Samaritan's Purse. So it's a ministry. And so if you're gay and positive for COVID, you're fucked if you wind up in Central Park at his 68-bed megachurch by any other name. And, you know, Stand by. I'll continue with the thought. Just a second. It's a weird afternoon. Sorry about that. Nix, the little black cat. Why do you always got to say the cat's black, Bob? Nix, the little black cat, has figured out that if she body slams the door back here to the Fabulous Horn Studio hard enough, that she can bounce it open and come back and be Studio Kitty and go walk about on the mix desk. No, can't have that. Bad things happen. Now, back to what I was going to get at a moment ago. I was 22 years old in 1985 when, and that's the era where we began to first hear about what we now know as HIV. And it was harrowing. The idea that sex could kill you was terrifying. And back then, despite the fact that people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson were saying that it was a plague sent by God to wipe out the abominations, people with brains understood that viruses don't have gender and viruses don't choose with specificity their targets. Took a while for the rest of the nation to hip to the fact that it was not, because remember, what was the first acronym for it? GRID, Gay Related Immune Disorder. And we went from GRID to AIDS and AIDS to HIV.
and it required transmission by bodily fluids. Precious bodily fluids, if we want to think in terms of General Jack D. Ripper out at Burpelson Air Force Base. Purity of essence. Peace on earth. And so the norm eventually, the norm towards safe sex, condoms, took hold. And eventually, although since it was the age of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, it took a while to take hold because he wouldn't even acknowledge that that the disease existed until Rock Hudson died and Elizabeth Taylor more or less shamed him into acknowledging it. Well, I really never thought I would see anything more terrifying than that. And then came Ebola. And that was terrifying, but you at least knew that as long as no bodily fluids were exchanged again, it was otherwise eventually manageable. And then this, you know, there's an old Italian proverb out there, and I don't know the Italian for it because I don't know a lick of Italian, you know, past buongiorno and ciao, and pronto when you pick up the phone. But there's an old Italian proverb that says sex, or in bed, is the poor man's opera. You may not have the money to afford a ticket to the opera house, but, well, there's always fucking. And it usually comes with, or it often comes with every bit as much drama as anything taking place on the operatic stage. And a lot of what takes place on the operatic stage has to do with what happens in bed. And one of the things that people have wondered, and I had a note, I think it was last night, from Hung Like Jesus, who said, you know, what are we going to call this generation of babies that are born out of this calamity? And of course, my preferred word is the coronials. They may not like that. Just saying. But here's the problem. I don't know if there's going to be a little baby boomlet out of this. Because you can't protect yourself against this disease with a condom. Mm-mm. Because, and I'm not trying to be graphic for the sake of being graphic or to appeal to prurient interests, if you're sitting, and it doesn't matter what position you take, if you're laying there or kneeling there or what, swinging from the chandelier by your knees or ankles or whatever, it doesn't matter, because along the way You're gonna be a grunting and a groaning and a huffing and a puffing, because, well, sex is a kind of it's an aerobic activity. It's a real calorie burner. But with every huff and puff and every grunt and groan, if you're asymptomatic, you're blasting your partner with COVID particles. Oh, and by the way, Brian Kemp, the genius white supremacist governor of the state of Georgia, who finally issued a stay the fuck home order, he said, He only found out, he issued the stay-at-home order quick as he found out that you could spread the disease and not even have symptoms. And he just figured that out yesterday. He must be dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. Experts have only been talking about asymptomatic spread, which is largely where community spread comes from, for a month or more. But old Brian Kemp, who apparently lives way back deep in a fucking cave somewhere, just now figured that out yesterday. And so now over at COVIDActNow.org, if you look at that map, you will find that in the South, in the Confederacy there, the map colors have changed. Colonel Trent Reeves, the governor of the state of Mississippi, shut his state down, as did Brian Kemp and old Bill Lee there in old volunteer governor Bill Lee in Tennessee. And so of the Confederacy, well, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Alabama, and South Carolina are still at war with the rest of the United States. Because failing to institute a stay-at-home law mandatory is nothing short of an act of war, biological war, against the rest of the nation. Alabama and South Carolina, Stan, are having their, having their 1861 flashback. Jesus. Alabama will probably be overloaded in their hospitals by May the 28th. All they have is voluntary social distancing. And they're looking at an estimated 18,000 dead. And an infection, a cumulative infection rate of 57% of the population of the state. There's already one case in Little Pickens County, Alabama. Here's the thing about Little Pickens County, Alabama. Their hospital closed a couple of weeks back. We talked about it. And they have a federal fucking prison there. And when this starts racing around that federal prison, it will go like a Kansas prairie fire. Horrifying, terrifying, and absolutely avoidable. In the little county where I was born and raised, they will be overwhelmed in their hospitals, the one little hospital in that county. It will be overwhelmed on or about June the 11th. And they're whistling past the graveyard there, South Carolina, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri. What the fuck is wrong with you, Iowa, Nebraska, Wyoming, Utah, North Dakota? And South Dakota is still an absolutely do-nothing state. Not even recommended social distancing. Damn. Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, says, thank you for not being afraid to call what the Confederacy is doing or not doing by not taking public health seriously. Fucking war against the rest of the people. The normal, sane people of this country. That's what it is. Well, my attitude changed when I was talking with Dr. McCauley earlier this week. And he said that people are potentially committing attempted murder. Well, if an individual is doing that, then what the hell is it when it is a matter of state policy to do it? When it is a matter of governmental policy? How do you avoid referring to it as what it is? Yeah, what's that? Silent R. Lamar says, Governor Kemp lives in a cave, but you left out that his cave has a very deep hole in it where he lives. Not deep enough. Lee, on the other hand, says, no, the Bushes are not Ferengi. Republicans are not Ferengi. Ferengis will abide by the deal. Ferengis will pay in full. Ferengis demand full payment. Ferengis live by rules. In this case, the rules of acquisition. And Ferengis have a society that does not destroy their home world. No, Ferengis, says Lee, are actually better than Republicans. Steve in New York. Infection calculations I did based upon the dates of 329 to 331. The end of March. Globally, increase 329 to 330, 9.6%. Increase 330 to 331, 8.76%. Of the increases globally from March 29th to March 30th, the U.S. infection was responsible for 35.15% of the total. Of the increases globally from March 30th to the 31st, the U.S. infections were responsible for 33.56% of the total. If we take out the U.S. numbers, the global numbers are as follows. Increase the 29th to the 30th, 7.85%. Increase March 30th to 31st, 7.46%. United States infections between the 29th and the 30th were up 16.32%. The 30th to the 31st were up 13.9%. In other words, we have 4% of the world's population, yet account for over one-third of the increases. If Trump had not intentionally done nothing, the increase per day globally would be 1.8 and 1.4 percentage points lower. Those are the people being infected and dying solely because of Donald John Trump. Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, mass murder by matter of policy is considered genocide, Bob. That is another word for it. Bloomberg has just published the same thing that I said a couple of minutes ago about us crossing the million infections mark. Darlene says simply, oh, fuck. Yeah, oh, fuck indeed. I think it's okay for us to say this is terrifying. And I think it's okay to note that we are terrified not just because of the nature of the disease, but because of the way that it is being mishandled. Because negligence, as we know, can be deadly. Irish Dave says, I'm reminded of the early days of AIDS. The T and V pussies were so scared of the Puritans, they used bodily fluids to label blood and semen, the only two fluids that contain sufficient concentrations of the virus to be communicable, so swapping spit or rubbing sweaty bodies were not dangerous. Misinformation much? And again, that's one of the things that makes COVID so much more terrifying. It didn't come as news to me when I read it earlier today, but the experts on the topic are now saying that it can be spread. It doesn't require a cough or a sneeze. No, really? That simply by talking or breathing, one may transmit these molecules, these particles. Who was surprised by that? We speak by exhaling air past the vibrating vocal cords and out of our mouths. Of course that can spread it. The simple exhalation of air out of the lungs, of course that can spread it. But it was, I guess it was a surprise to some. Yeah, go figure. Let's check in for a minute on Dr. Birx.
Just concerned about that. Has the curve changed enough at this point where that 100,000 to 240,000 people likely to die, has that shifted upwards at all?
No, it's just when I look at what, so we're in week 2.2 in our guidelines. And I guess what I expected when the president put out guidelines that said, don't go to bars, don't be in groups more than 10 people. When we said that now over 16 days ago, that was serious. And then you could see what happened subsequently. And you can see the number of individuals who have been infected since then. Because the people we're seeing infected today and in hospitals today were infected after the guidelines went out. So that's what we're worried about. And we're worried about that we're still in this. And that's why the president extended it for 30 days. But we have to get out of this. We have to start seeing this.
But Deborah, aren't you referring to just a few states? Because many of those states are dead flat.
Yes. And there are states that are dead flat. But, you know, what changes the curve is a new Detroit, a new Chicago, a new New Orleans, a new Colorado. Those change the curves because it all of a sudden spikes with the number of new cases, because you have a certain projection of new cases and then a whole nother city comes on top where they're in their logarithmic phase. So those ones that I talked about that had test results greater than 13% positive, all of those states or all of those counties are in logarithmic phase. That means there are a lot of counties that aren't, and we're excited about those counties that have been testing and still finding quite flat, and hopefully maybe Sunday or so or sometime this weekend we can go through all the states and the curves again, so California, you can see where, you know, the California and Washington are still steady. But we're watching very carefully because we see that you can go from this to this very quickly. And this should not be happening any longer in new places if people are doing the social distancing, washing their hands, not getting together in large groups more than 10.
I look at the graphs all the time.
Yes.
And you have many, many flatliners. I call them flatliners. I'm amazed at them.
Flatliners, really?
A couple that are up. It's hard to blame the flatliners for not doing a good job.
No, I don't want to say that. No, don't. No. Thank you, sir.
May I have another?
I want to praise the states that, and I think I want to be able to call them out and show you their graphs so you can see they've had steady small cases. They're testing. and they're doing a lot of testing, and their percent of test positives are under 5%. I mean, we have a whole group of states who are testing, and their positivity rate is under 5%.
What about the states that aren't testing sufficiently and have rates under 5%? You know, like West Virginia.
6% and then 35%. That's what we're trying to prevent. And it's the metro areas that are absolutely crucial in this. And so if you're in a metro area or you're in a small city, please make sure all of your friends and family are following the guidelines. That's the best thing we can do.
Because I saw those pens going 5 minutes ago. They were so, they were thrilled. And the fact is, yes, we compare them to Italy, one place. But we have many places that are really doing great. And I think that's what Deborah meant. She didn't mean all of them. So when you write your story tomorrow, maybe you'll write it correctly. She was talking about one state and another state is...
Shut the fuck up, Donnie. Talking about states that have flat lines. Well, hell, there are still states that have no reported cases. I mean, Texas terrifies me, but let's see here. King County, Texas. COVIDActNow.org says we either weren't able to get data for King County, Texas, or no cases have been confirmed. You know, those are two radically separate things. There are probably half the counties in Texas have no reported cases. Guess who isn't testing sufficiently? Sure. I mean, there are relatively flat lines in, say, well, they're Alabama again, because they're just sort of social distancing if you feel like it. And their line is flat. That's because they're leaving the fucking station. Everybody's on the roller coaster ride. And, you know, when you leave the roller coaster entrance where you get on, you ride flat for a little bit till they take you to the first slope. There are a lot of states and a lot of counties that are in that place. But it doesn't mean they're not going. It doesn't mean they're not riding the roller coaster anyway. Damnation, the stupidity, the toxic, deadly stupidity. He's desperate to try to make this look not as bad, not as horrifying as it so obviously is. Kyle says, my father was just wondering aloud to me why I wasn't going crazy with no sports being played right now. I simply responded that people are dying and that's more important than some fun, entertaining games. He asked me why it should matter to me if people I don't know are dying, if it means that I'm stuck in my house unable to watch my favorite teams on a nightly basis. Bob, these maggots have no fucking souls. I think you're probably right. I mean, or maybe it's just an ethical and moral deficit they suffer from. And that goes hand in hand with a study that came out just as the shit was hitting the fan. And it's fascinating information. It turns out that researchers examining, you know, a century's worth of data made a rather surprising discovery. When Republicans are in power, well, the study was of crime statistics over a period of 110 years in the United States. It was done by a Yale psychiatrist and also an expert on violence, Dr. Bandy Lee. And the information came out 2 weeks ago. Dr. Lee said, I did a study that showed consistently over 110 years, Republican presidencies increase violent death rates while Democratic presidencies decrease them. Same with economic variables. Ordinarily, we would label one disease and the other health. You do not ordinarily think of the difference of party as a difference of death versus life, and yet here it is. Controlling for all other variables, the party difference was decisive. When you've got a Republican president, you have violent death. She studied 1900 to 2010. And it's unmistakable. When Republicans get their hands on the reins of power, people die. Maybe that would be shocking to some people. Not shocking to me. Oh, Sparky just let me know that there in his county, they've had their first case reported yesterday. A man in his 60s. Well, stay safe, Sparky. You and Judy both. Stay safe. And, of course, Republicans manifest their violence legislatively and judicially as well. 2 days ago, a federal appeals court ruling on a move by the state of Texas held that the state, through its attorney general, Ken Paxton, was within its rights to classify abortions as, get this, elective procedures. If a woman violates the order, she can be jailed for up to 6 months and be hit with a $1,000 fine for exercising her constitutional rights that have no bearing whatsoever on the need for social distancing. So groups that protect a woman's right to choose in Texas sued. And late this past Monday, a trial court judge issued a temporary injunction against the ban. Attorney General Ken Paxton, monster, then ran off to court to do some judicial violence to women in his state. And the appeals court stayed the lower court's ruling, quote, to allow this court sufficient time to consider the motion previously filed by the activists advocating on behalf of women in Texas. Now, what was Ken Paxton's excuse?
Well, he said this decision just prioritizes supplies and personal protective equipment for the medical professionals in need.
It was just, I believe, yesterday. Yeah. Governor Ned Lamont in Connecticut announced that a newborn in that state had died of COVID-19. Where were the Republicans? Where's that culture of life? Little baby girl from Hartford, 7 weeks old. If you ever needed proof that, well, you know, while the baby's in the womb, it's a precious life. 7 weeks old? Kid, you're on your own. In the postmortem exam of the baby, she tested positive for COVID-19 and had no other known medical conditions. And that 7-week-old little girl is among the youngest victims of the disease. Gosh, if only Ken Paxton had been there to make sure that she stayed in the womb and didn't get all borned and stuff. They are evil. And apparently, Dr. Bandy Lee's study about Republicans and violence matches a trend that was discovered over in the UK. Brother Deacon Asa said the British over 20 years ago did a study that shows that when the Tories, the conservatives in the UK, are in power, suicides go up. Because conservatives make life miserable. Freaks. Earlier today, Andrew Yang tweeted, and I think we'll give him the Captain Obvious award for today. We are not going to be the same after this. No, really? You think? A country that loses 200,000 at a conservative estimate and could lose millions of its citizenry in a matter of months? No, that country will not be the same. But the larger point is that no country is the same after it has been through a plague. And how much change depends on how dire the plague. See, they keep pushing this 100,000 to 240,000 number because that is what Nitwit Nero has convinced himself constitutes victory. Well, that's true. Steve in New York pointing out that the precious little seven-week-old baby in Connecticut was, you know, a baby, not a fetus. Precious little fetus. Yeah, if it had been a fetus, Republicans might have cared. Truly, they are the party of death. Yes, says Darlene, a newborn. And up there, Darlene says it's traumatic like Sandy Hook. I know. Ron and Raleigh says you have to stop. Please, you have to stop playing these news conferences. Every time I listen to one, I feel my IQ losing points. Well, you'll notice that I cut away when Nitwit Nero started running his mouth. He's playing his imaginary accordion right now. How much Adderall do you think it takes to make it possible for him to stand up there and blab for 2 hours and breathe all over people? Oh, and this needs to be borne in mind. You know how we talked about Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis finally issuing a stay-at-home order yesterday? Well, he finally did it, and then he turned around and fucked it up because, of course, he is Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the white supremacist adjacent illegitimate governor of Florida. He's an idiot and a nightmare, and proof that having the name Harvard on your diploma as an indication of intelligence is, well, it indicates, Harvard on a diploma indicates less as to intelligence than Harvard on a jar of beets indicates that there are beets in the jar. So he issued the stay-at-home order. And then hours later, he issued another one. And the second order forbids individual municipalities and counties from taking action that would be more stringent than what Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis ordered. It says that the new guidelines that take effect tomorrow morning, quote, shall supersede any conflicting official action or order issued by local officials in response to COVID-19. So take, for instance, the fact that Hillsborough County said churches have to close. And that's how Rodney Howard Brown wound up getting busted. Well, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis' order doesn't close churches. So guess what Rodney Howard Brown is going to be doing on Sunday? He's going to be helping to spread the disease some more. Florida is going to become a terrifying place to be, if it isn't already. And to the members of our community there, we stand with you, we love you, we care, we hear you, and we want to hear from you. And please stay the hell away from the Christians, because they have become genocidalists. You know, the evangelical types. Steve says, I'm very skeptical of Bandy Lee's study, which is why I should probably read it. That strikes me that it is likely domestic violence, given that FDR, Harry Truman, and LBJ were present during most of the major fights in the 20th century, realizing that Nixon was president during most of Vietnam. Domestic violence is violence, too. And I think, but she's got charts and graphs that show things like homicide. So, yeah, do go and have a look. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem treating it with credibility. Thorn in the side. This is a thorn in the side. You know how we talked back before we were beset by this disease and we were trying to visualize a better America? And I would say, dare to dream. And I would talk about the necessity for lopping off the heads of the Hydra. You know, Moscow Mitch and his right-hand man, his evil minion, John Cornholio down in Texas. Darlene sent this along from Newsweek. There's John Cornholio, who today said that a national shelter-in-place order would be an overreaction. Not every place is the same. We've had the same conversation in Texas, but some places we have more cows than people, and the virus loves the crowd, loves congestion, and that's why you see places like New York and Dallas, for example, which is having its own struggles. I mean, we know what to do. We need the social separation and the hygiene. While we continue to test for cures and while we continue to work toward a vaccine, locking down the country more than necessary to defeat the virus, to me, seems like an overreaction. Trying to kill us. I know some members of this community have read, and this would be a great time to reread it, by the way. I'm watching some movies and stuff, but I'm doing a shit ton of reading. This would be a great time to reread Joseph Heller's classic, Catch-22. Because one of the central tenets, and it's not a spoiler, of the protagonist, Captain Yossarian, is that he refuses to fly any more missions because he has realized that both sides of the war are trying to kill him. The Germans are trying to kill him because he's part of the opposing army, or the opposing air corps, the opposing forces. The crazy-ass American officer in charge of his flight group, however, is trying to kill him because he wants to make general. And he likes nice, tight bomb patterns. Well, here we are. Because Donald Trump would rather see hundreds of thousands of dead Americans than simply get out of the way and let competent people handle this disaster. Well, his evil minions like John Cornholio echo his own words. And you heard them a few minutes ago, and that's the value to running that audio from time to time. You heard Donald Trump say, yeah, but there are counties where they're still flatlining. I call them flatliners. Oh, you dumbass. Yeah, there's going to be 200,000, maybe a million flatliners when you're fucking done, you goddamn killer. And we have no means of self-defense except to stay home, wash our hands, And I cannot overemphasize the importance of good nutrition. Eat as well as you possibly can. Try to eat fresh, not processed, not junk. And hydrate, 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 hydrate. Exercise if you can. Have your body in the best shape it can be so that you've got as much of a fighting chance as you can have if it gets to you. Are they saying any of that? No. They're just going. They're just getting in front of the cameras, and felching Donald Trump every day. I'm beginning to wonder if he rolled out a rollaway bed, would Dr. Bricks get up and pee on it for him? Oh yes, thank you, Mr. President, for reminding me. I'm such a silly little woman that I forgot that you're smarter than me. Deborah. And meanwhile, Dr. Fauci is having to run around with a security detail now. They tried to evade that question at the shit show yesterday. But it got out today. The maggots have been threatening his life. And the maggots have lots and lots of guns. And when a maggot is willing to literally drive a diesel locomotive off the rails in an attempt to do a suicide run against the USNS Mercy docked in Los Angeles, you know how dangerous they have become. The Newsweek article notes that about half the population of planet Earth is under orders to stay home as of today. Several countries are completely locked down, and they are the ones who will get through this better than others, Italy notwithstanding. And Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, well, no, we ain't, because we, you heard John Cornholio, there's counties in Texas where they're more cows than they are people. Coronavirus don't care about no cow. Meanwhile, the Texas Hospital Association is begging him for a stay-at-home order because the Texas Hospital Association understands that no matter how flat it may feel like you're, the ground you're on right now is, sooner or later you're going to start climbing that deadly roller coaster hill. And that there's only one way to keep that hill out of your journey. And that is to shut everything down. There is a new peer-reviewed journal article out there. Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine have tested a potential vaccine on mice. And in the study, they found that the vaccine produced antibodies capable of fighting off COVID-19. Now they have to apply to the U.S. FDA for investigational new drug approval. Then would come phase one of human clinical trials that would start months from now. Months. More months than these than the roller coaster curves that we're facing. The first human trial of a vaccine started in Seattle last month. those researchers were desperate enough that they said fuck it and blew off the animal trials and moved into human trials. But the Pittsburgh substance is the first one that has been scrutinized by outside experts, namely peer review. And what they think they're finding out is that there is something called a spike protein that is critical in inducing immunity to the virus. Andrea Gombato, associate professor of surgery at the Pittsburgh School of Medicine, said, "We knew exactly where to fight this new virus." So when you see, you'll probably see more write-ups about it, and you'll know it's the Pittsburgh vaccine when you see it referred to as Pitt, P-I-T-T, Co-V-A-C-C, Pitt Covac. Interestingly, instead of doing a needle stab like your annual flu shot, they've made a patch about the size of your fingertip. And in the patch are 400 teeny tiny micro needles. And they deliver the spike proteins directly into the skin because the skin, under the surface, has the greatest amount of immune reaction. Just from a fuck, technology is cool standpoint, the needles are made entirely of sugar and the protein pieces, and they dissolve once they're inside the skin. And instead of, they went with that instead of a needle, because they were thinking back to the original smallpox vaccine where they scratched the skin. That's why a couple of generations of people have a smallpox scar on their arm or their leg. So that's reasonably good news. But because I am Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine, we have to be cognizant that the dickheads ye have always with ye and so too with this case. Oh hell yeah. In particular, here come the fucking anti-vaxxers. Or in this case, just plain old-fashioned Republican maggots. Kurt Landry is another one of those evangelical freaks out there. And you have to understand the power that these fuckers exercise over the people who believe them. They will do as they're told. And so, consequently, this. And of course, we're all tied in with the Antichrist. It's all Antichrist and all that bullshit.
Do not pray. Do not hope. Do not think, oh, praise God, they're going to have a vaccine. That vaccine is from the pit of hell. Okay? Do not pray for those vaccines. And do not take the vaccine. These vaccines are coming. They're not going to be good. They're not good for you physically and spiritually. They're a setup for what shall come later. This is the first step. This is not the mark of the beast. This is not the ID chip. But what will happen with this, and this is the order I believe it will happen in, is they're going to bring this next vaccine and they're going to mark, not in the hand and the forehead, but they're going to have a computer record of everybody who does take the vaccine. But more importantly, they're going to take the ones that do not. And basically, the ones that won't take the vaccine will be the Jews and the Christians, because we have religious issues to not take it. And so what a way to kind of gather those names up and gather those people up. And so then when it does come time for the mark of beast to trade.
Hold the fuck on. So an Episcopal who, if there's a vaccine, an Episcopal who takes the vaccine, isn't a Christian? A Jew who takes the vaccine isn't a Jew? Huh? Yeah, two preachers are already dead because of this kind of shit.
And sell those that, in order to get the mark of the beast, what will happen is in order to for them to put the chip in, you're going to have proof and verification that you've had these vaccines. And then,
yeah, because everybody's going to line right up for the mark of the beast. It's not like the damn thing hasn't been around the book for, 1800 years, and fools like this haven't been hollering about it. Back of the hand, right on the forehead. So that guy. And then, of course, Rick Wiles. He's got some ideas about vaccines, too. Because, of course, he does. I wonder if we'll hear about the Jews.
When is Bill Gates's
Bill Gates'
serpent tongue going to come out of his mouth, and when will his horns and tail appear? This man is building Lucifer's Antichrist system. Bill Gates wants to track every human who's been vaccinated with a coronavirus vaccine, and he wants to put a microchip in the vaccine, a nano-sized microchip. It calls it a quantum dot tattoo. This guy's an enemy of the human race.
Actually, the guy who's encouraging people to avoid vaccines is pretty much an enemy of the human race. But, don't let me confuse. Let's not confuse Rick Wiles.
He's an enemy of Almighty God. Bill Gates is turning out to be one very evil man. I mean, personally, I'd like to tell Bill Gates where he can stick his syringe.
How Christian of him.
I'm fed up with this stuff. I would like to help put that syringe there. This guy's a wacko.
That sounds like a threat of violence against Bill Gates, doesn't it? Now, this is not the Bill Gates Admiration Program or the Bill Gates Appreciation Hour, but, he's not encouraging people to gather around 2,000 people at a time and smolik and LARP on each other and hug and shake hands and kiss and sing hymns at the top of their lungs and ejecting viral particles for yards into the air to land on other people. No. Rick Wiles is the one doing that. E.W. Jackson is the one doing that.
I mean, look, it's one thing to say you believe in vaccines and you want to help, get as many people vaccinated against horrible diseases. Okay, I can buy Bill Gates's position like that. But let me tell you, when you start talking about putting a nano-sized microchip in it, buddy, you're my enemy.
Has anybody told him about infrared electric eye door openers? Or You know, he needs to get together and have a nice long conversation with Jill Stein about Wi-Fi. This is existential stuff. And by existential, I mean existence, as in the existence of humanity. And along the way, an epidemiology professor from Harvard by the name of Mark Lipsitch says that there are a lot more. I mean, if we go back to the Johns Hopkins site again, total confirmed cases in the U.S. is 238,820. Well, in an editorial in the Washington Post, Mark Lipsitch said that there are a whole lot more people with the virus in the United States than the public knows or suspects. And he called out the multimillionaire for-profit media for all asking the same shit. Test kits and isolation. And so Mark Lipsitch in the editorial said that he wanted to provide a way forward with more detail. In one respect, he wrote, the answer is the same for all of them. We must vastly expand our testing capacity. No country has controlled transmission effectively without massive testing capacity. The United States currently has a sliver of the capacity we need, which is a tiny fraction of that available in other countries. South Korea has performed over 320,000 tests, almost one for every 150 people, 30 times the testing per capita we have done in the United States. And remember, we've only not done it because, well, you know, the United States has wide open spaces, and there are 38 million people in Seoul, Korea, South Korea. 38M. He continues, exceptional teams are racing to solve testing bottlenecks at local and state levels. Massachusetts is just one example, filling the vacuum left by the complete absence of federal leadership. We don't have enough protective equipment for testers, nor swabs for sampling, or reagents to extract genetic material from the virus. We don't have enough physical test kits or enough human power to run large-scale testing. The result is that we have no idea how many people are infected with the coronavirus or how fast the virus is spreading. Containment can work when there are few enough cases that the public health system is able to deal with them and their contacts so that the workload is manageable, and when a large fraction of cases are tested and identified so that preventing them from infecting anyone else dramatically reduces the total amount of transmission. But then this. The feckless federal response created such delays in testing that most cases here are not being confirmed even now. We don't know even approximately how many people are infected, but it's certainly more than the current count of more than 35,000 confirmed cases. The editorial's a little bit old. Even though many places are reporting relatively small numbers of confirmed cases, this is not comforting. In many parts of the country, we're seeing rising numbers of flu-like illnesses, and when tested, they're not flu and may actually be COVID-19 if only we could test them. In conclusion, he says, if we can scale up testing, and we still haven't, and reduce case numbers through effective social distancing, we should consider testing very widely and resuming isolation and tracing, which work best in synergy with social distancing. For now, testing priorities should go to hospitalized patients and healthcare workers to protect them from infecting one another, and to surveillance to estimate the prevalence of mild infection in the community. None of which is happening to any effective degree. Damn. And just for the bullshit silly value of it, this. We have heard from, Jared, apparently. Oh, dear. Let me see if I can. There it is. Sandra sent this along. Hey, Sandra. This is pretty rich. They trotted young Jared out, and I'll let you know now that. Well, I like Jabberwocky better in when Lewis Carroll wrote it.
What the president asked is that all of the recommendations that we make be based on data. He wanted us to be very rigorous to make sure that we were studying the data.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, he's a fucking genius. The evidence should be based on data as opposed to what? Birds on a wire? Cracks in chicken bones? Tea leaves? Goat entrails.
Collecting data. A lot of things in this country were happening very quickly, and we wanted to make sure that we were trying to keep updating our models and making sure that we were making informed decisions and informed recommendations to him based on the data that we were able to collect and put together.
Another Harvard failure.
The president wanted to make sure that we had the best people doing the best jobs and making sure that we had the right people.
Best of the best of the best, sir.
Focused on all the things that needed to happen to make sure that we can deliver in these unusual times for the American people.
Ah, well, okay. As long as the times are just, well, you know, unusual. Not terrifying or deadly or horrifying or soul testing. Not just unusual. It's unusual. And you know what it is? It's unusual when Jared goes home to his penthouse and there's Precious Princess I Wankamadaddy Trump Kushner, and she's used their 7 million thread count fine French percale sheets to make a pup tent for her and the little Kushnerians. It's unusual.
The president also instructed me to make sure that I break down every barrier needed to make.
Oh well, John Henry the steel driving man. He's going to break down some barriers.
Make sure that the teams can succeed. This is an effort where the government is doing things that the government doesn't normally do. We're stretching. We're acting very quickly. And the president wants to make sure that the White House is fully behind the different people running the different lines of effort to make sure that we get everything done in a speed that the president demands.
People who need people. God damn. You know, I think Scott's right. We're gonna have to make a clean recording of him saying, "We're all screwed, Bob," and I can just put it into the little virtual cart player. Wow. And I know, you hate the clips, right? You hate the clips, and I understand why. Well, you know what? That's a good observation, Brother Deacon Asa. Shouldn't Jared be in Bahrain or Qatar somewhere tossing some Arab salad for some rubles? It's what he usually does. This is a moment from one of the shit shows. And it's not for content, just for the fact that this is goddamn funny. Or would be under different circumstances.
Mr. President, Seattle police have reported a surge in calls about domestic violence. A number of groups have raised concerns.
About Mexican violence?
Domestic violence.
You got that. Let's do that again.
President, Seattle police have reported a surge in calls about domestic violence. A number of groups have raised concerns.
About Mexican violence?
Domestic violence.
He's bummed out.
Mexican violence?
And you can hear him get excited. Domestic violence. Oh.
Because, well, you know, domestic violence, you know, some people just don't know when to shut up. Mexican violence?
Oh, God. And all the distilleries are making just straight grain alcohol now for hand sanitizer. What a world, what a world, what a world. Yeah. Yeah, Darlene caught that too. What the fuck? Wait. Break down every barrier needed? Word salad is word salad is word salad. Irish Dave wants to know, but will Jared, friend of the Star Trek character, refuse the vaccination because Jew? One wonders. Albert, meanwhile, says, can you estimate how many Gospel Sharps own computers that use Microsoft software? Hey, I'd say most, well, your highfalutins probably use Apple because they can afford them. But, you know, Macs. But your average Gospel Sharp, he's probably, those dickheads are probably running Windows XP. Jude points out something worth remembering. You never hear the Dominionists and the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals talking much about Jared's family building and, you know, the address of it. 666. Because it doesn't fit the narrative, I guess. Word salad, says Darlene. No, I think it's Freudian slippage. He accidentally told some truth. That's entirely possible. I ran the Rick Wiles stuff. I got a cowbell here. Cowbell for Scott. Rick Wiles? Scott in San Diego says, put Trump back on. This microchip guy is too goddamn crazy. Woo! I know. So... Well, I, like I said, I'm sorry about the late start to the program. That won't happen tomorrow. But I'm glad I got done what I needed to get done. And I hope folks enjoy the subs, sandwiches, cheese, pork steaks. I hope they did. And I hope you'll all come around for Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Fundraising goal will probably be around, we're still trying to finish Shirley's challenge, Bruce's memorial challenge, and that has $140 to go. Thank you, Brian, for taking it down some. Thank you very kindly. And, well, you be here and I'll be here, and we will have a whale of a good conversation. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers at PayPal and Patreon. Thanks to our a la carte contributors, and thanks for all the overlap between the three. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and the struggle continues. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Wash your hands, do your laundry, stay home, and we will be socially distant together tomorrow. Later, y'all.